Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM from Bellevue, just outside Seattle, here in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this planet a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this Earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. Out of This World Radio is one of the most popular talk shows in the 3.1 million Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 160,000 listeners in over 70 countries. And I want to thank everyone so much today for listening and for their beautiful support. Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the Donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. I also have a television program called Out of This World TV, which broadcasts three times a week on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays on Channel 22 in the Seattle Olympia area. It's also available on YouTube under either my name, Ted Marr, or Out of This World. And I want to thank everyone so much again today for listening today, and I want to thank my sponsors of the show, including the wonderful Crystal Spirit Spiritual Center in Tacoma and Tom Palladino, a famous scalar energy healer from Florida. Tom actually is having a special 15-day free trial of his wonderful scalar energy healing program going on now, and if you'd like to enroll in this fantastic program, it's free. Please go to his website at www.selfhealgo.com. That's selfhealgo.com. We're also looking for additional sponsors and advertisers, and any advertising on the show will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course, Eric and KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I'd like to ask everyone listening today to please send lots of love and light to Carolyn and her wonderful family for the loss of their beautiful father a few months ago, as well as to Masako, who is Michiko Hayashi's mother in Japan, who had a stroke earlier this year. I also have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on or contact your guides and get some good spiritual advice, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793, or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. And if you missed my Galactic Wisdom Conference last month, you can order the audios and some videos of the conference for just $97. Please send me an email if you're interested in doing that. My next Galactic Wisdom Conference will be held at the same location, Olympia, Washington, from April 12th to the 16th, and the website for it is www.galacticwisdomconference.com, and I hope you can come to that. In addition, this summer, from July 2nd through the 8th, as well as September 6th through the 11th, I'll be taking a small group of people to Mount Shasta, Telos, and the Hollow Earth. During our trips to Shasta, we always see Sasquatch and lots of UFOs flying in and out of the top of Mount Shasta from the Hollow Earth, and we always have an amazing time. In addition to that, from August 31st to September 2nd, I'll be sponsoring an Ascension Conference at Mount Shasta with people who've actually been physically to Telos and the Hollow Earth, including Diane Robbins, a frequent visitor to Telos and the author of many books on Telos and the Hollow Earth, Susan Isabel, a local psychic and channel to the Hollow Earth from Mount Shasta, Judy Kelly, a frequent visitor to Telos, as well as many others. If you're interested, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I want to say also that tomorrow and on Sunday, I'll be at the Crystal Spirit Center in Tacoma, just off 38th near the Tacoma Mall, giving readings. And with that, I'd like to bring in my good friend Charlie from the Crystal Spirit Center. Eric, could you please call Charlie and bring him on? That would be great. The Crystal Spirit Center is located just off 38th near the Tacoma Mall. It's about a half hour south of Seattle. And I'll be there about from noon tomorrow all the way to 7 p.m. and then again on Saturday from noon until 5. It's a beautiful place, and it's what I think one of the best spiritual centers in the state. Charlie and his wife Deborah have an incredible books. It's a bookstore. It's a crystal center. They've got all kinds of spiritual things there, and they have classes as well. So if you are interested in metaphysical and spiritual subjects, it's always a really good idea to visit there. We've got Simon Parks. I'll be interviewing Simon with the wonderful Simon Parks today for the rest of this hour into the second hour. And this is one interview I think you'll find really out of this world. Eric is now bringing on Charlie onto the program. And if you are in Tacoma or tomorrow or on Sunday, please stop by and enjoy meeting you on it. I'll also have copies of my new book, Messages from the Masters. And the Crystal Spirit Center is a wonderful place. And I'm sure you'll be love to see there. There's also, I wanted to tell you too, that when we go to Shasta later this summer, we usually have contact with Sasquatch. And I had an amazing experience last September when I was at Mount Shasta. There was a lady who came on the trip who had been crippled for decades. And at one night, a group of Sasquatch surrounded her van and asked her if she wanted to be healed. And she said she'd love to. So they and some extraterrestrials from the Hollow Earth did heal her, and she's walking today, the first time she's been able to walk in about 20 or 30 years as a result of that healing experience. Anyway, I wanted to bring on Charlie now from the Crystal Center in Tacoma. Charlie, are you there?
Yeah, thanks, Ted, for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. How do people get to your wonderful center if they're driving in?
Well, we're in Tacoma, and it's not too far from the Tacoma Mall. So off of I-5, you take the 38th exit, just head down the hill, and we're kitty corner across the street from Marlene's Market and Deli.
Okay, wonderful. And what is your phone number in case people get totally lost?
253-272-4367.
Great, Charlie. Well, I'll be there tomorrow and Sunday, and I hope you can stop by. It's a beautiful place, and I guarantee you'll feel much better after visiting there.
All right.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Great, Charlie, and I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
We'll see you then. Have a great show.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks so much, Charlie. Great. Thanks so much for coming on. With that, I'd like to bring in my good friend Simon Parks from England. He's coming to us live outside London. Simon, are you there?
Hello, Ted. Yes, I'm here.
You know, this is amazing technology. Every time you're on my show, Simon, it's like you're right next door. I mean, you're right in the same studio. It's very, very clear.
Well, I might be, mightn't I?
have you mastered? You probably do remote viewing, don't you? Are you able to bilocate?
I do remote view. Mm-hmm. My very first remote view wasn't very happy. I thought I would remote view the White House, and I did, mm-hmm. and I didn't realize that there were so many underground rooms under the White House, and I found something there that was rather frightening.
Oh no!
So that was my very first remote view.
I probably shouldn't ask you what you found, but
no, I'm happy to say this. No, it's fine. This was during the Obama presidency, mm-hmm. and I found a small gray. Writing on a blackboard with a piece of chalk, and very interestingly enough, this being was writing not as we write from left to right. Mm-hmm. This being was writing from bottom to top.
Oh, wow.
And from right to left. So on the chalkboard with a piece of chalk, if you can imagine, mm-hmm. starting at the bottom of the chalkboard, working up, and then moving down to the bottom and left, so from right to left. It was very interesting, and then it was very cross that that I had I was watching it, so I didn't go back there again.
You know, there was a Twilight Zone episode, I don't know if you remember this or not, Simon, back in the late 50s, and these aliens had visited the White House. It's a very interesting show, and they had presented a book to the then U.S. president called To Serve Man. And they look like tall grays because they had these big, big heads and the big black eyes and everything. And at the very end of the episode, it said To Serve Man actually was a cookbook. And so when and everybody thought that they were the greatest things in sliced bread helping out man, but it's actually the last scene is the scientist who discovered that it meant to mean To Serve Man was a cookbook for humanity, different recipes for cooking humans. And he was on this transport back to the home planet. But I always thought about that. I didn't know whether you were able to decipher what he was writing, but maybe it meant to be To Serve Man. I'm not sure.
Well, That's new. I haven't heard that one. No, that's mm-hmm. that's new and for me, but sadly, probably more truth in it than not.
Sure, sure. Of course, the Greys are a robotic species, genetically altered by the reptilians to serve their purposes. And I know that there has been a lot of interference in our free will and in our governments, especially the U.S. government, for many years. By the reptilians and the Greys. So it's interesting you saw that there. Yes. And I take it you haven't been back there since.
No, I chose not to because there wasn't actually a great deal to learn. I suppose what I gained out of it was that under the Obama presidency, there certainly were Greys operating under these vaults. And interestingly enough, the corridors were guarded by American soldiers. Now, as a British person, mm-hmm. I'm not very good with American uniforms. Mm-hmm. And if any of your listeners get any news, they could write into you. These Americans wore white metal hats, and they had white gloves, and a white band or the gun. They carried the rifle in front of them. Not at an angle, but actually in front of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like a stick you'd hold in straight in front of you. Hmm. But they were almost as if they'd come off a parade ground. Huh. And I've never seen anything like that. So, but there may be one of your listeners who's maybe a vet or ex-military and might be able to tell you what that is.
Well, let me give out an encrypted email service so people can write there in confidence. It's outofthisworld1150@unseen, UNSEEN.IS, which is an Icelandic email account. You're welcome to write that, or outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. But if anybody out there listening today does know what those are, please send me an email in confidence, and I'd love to hear more about that. Well, you know, this is the exciting times we live in. Simon, we saw the rise of the Bitcoin go way up and then way down twice, actually, in October and then a couple of months ago. And you actually predicted, I remember reading on the internet, on the web, that you predicted that this would correct down.
Yes, I did.
What do you see for the future of Bitcoins and, more importantly, the fiat currencies for this planet?
A very, very poor end for Bitcoin, but I do see a very big success for the majority of other cryptocurrencies. Hmm. But Bitcoin paved the way for everything else. But what happened, of course, was that Bitcoin became the preserve of the super rich, whereas the general cryptocurrencies will become the norm for everyone else. The danger to the petrodollar, to the fiat currencies, is not blockchain, it's not the cryptocurrencies, it is the Chinese yuan, now that it's gold-backed. So if there is going to be a reduction in paper money in the dollar, it won't be because of cryptocurrencies, it will simply be because everyone shifts to buying oil with gold-backed Chinese money.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Now, I think you've written a little bit about the yuan. Let me see here. I copied that. Yeah, March 23rd, you said that the Chinese yuan will be launched on the oil market, and it was a direct competition to the U.S. dollar.
Yes, I think I can't remember if I predicted it would be launched mm-hmm. on the 26th or the 28th of mm-hmm. the month, because mm-hmm. the information I'd had was that they were, you know, they weren't sure themselves. Mm-hmm. That's now been launched and is there. The question is just how, at the moment, what's happening is that nations and incredibly wealthy people are hedging their bets. So they're buying or trading in both currencies. Mm-hmm. And each one is looking over the shoulder of the next to see what he or she is doing. Mm-hmm. And all it will take is for one person to ditch the paper money, and that will start a chain reaction. So at the moment, everyone's being super cautious and being mm-hmm. careful. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Ted, I did predict the catastrophic collapse of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I predicted it 6 weeks before it occurred. Mm-hmm. The only thing is I was about 1,000 out. I said it would probably reach you know, however many, and I can't remember now, it's on the website or on the radio shows, but I was a bit out on that, but only by 1,000. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was that I predicted the mini crash in the Dow Jones, and again, I was about 1,000 out on that. I said the talk was that the Rothschilds would crash the Dow at about 30,000, and that was generally accepted. Mm. And I said, no, that's not the case. I'll be very surprised if it reaches 27,000, 26,000. Mm-hmm. And again, I was about 4 days. I got the crash right, but I was 4 days out. Sure. So I don't have a sophisticated computer program that predicts this. I just watch, and when I see, then I try and let people know, because there are lots of ordinary people who've just got 300, 400, 500 bucks invested. And now, why should they lose? Right. Why should they lose? So that's why I go public with it. And if it gives them the chance to pull their money out and put it somewhere else, then good luck to them.
Well, that's good. That's good. I hope to be having Cliff High on my show here in the next couple of months. Cliff said he would be coming on. I just need to finalize a date with him. He uses computer programs to determine the future of the stock and Bitcoin markets. He's been very accurate in that, although he said recently that he was surprised that it hasn't turned around quite yet, but I think it will. One thing I wanted to share with you something special, Simon. I had a gentleman on my show several years ago named Wilbur Allen. Now, Wilbur's an interesting fellow. He's a retired civil servants fellow from the federal government. He lives in Washington, D.C., about six or seven blocks from the White House, and he's got a retirement, Simon, and his sole hobby is to go up on his roof in the middle of the night and take pictures of UFOs landing on the White House lawn. And he does it with night vision goggles and the best equipment he can find, typically Nikon cameras. And he said that sometimes what the reptilians will do and the grays will do, they'll zap out his cameras. They'll get mad at him and send a laser beam and burn up like a couple thousand dollars worth of cameras. But he just shrugs his shoulders. He's bought insurance. And I don't know if he's told his insurance company that you know, what happens, but apparently they have replaced his camera equipment. And I guess it's the first document instance of being harmed by an extraterrestrial race. So they destroyed his camera equipment, but yet the Earth insurance company has paid him for a new camera equipment. So, at any rate, he sent me a bunch of pictures of these spacecraft landing on the White House lawn while President Obama was president. I don't know what's going on now. I know that things are changing, and I guess this brings me to my next question. Many of the reptilians I've heard in the Greys are actually exiting and they're being forced off the planet. What's that situation, Simon, from your sources? I'd be interested, curious to know.
Well, there'd be very, very few craft landing on the White House lawn now that President Trump is there. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it won't happen, but it would be very, very reduced. Would make a distinction between aliens and humans trying to exit the planet. Mm-hmm. And of course, for many people who listen to the radio show all over the world, that won't be so surprising. But for those who haven't yet discovered your wonderful radio show, they would be quite shocked to think that people could exit this world. Mm. And we're talking about the CERN device, the Hadron Collider, which is on the borders between France and Spain, France and Switzerland.
Oh, yes.
This is a device that was initially built to try to open a portal into the fourth dimension so that these bad guys could literally jump ship. Now, there was an attempt in 2008 by a group of people to shut down CERN, and that was partially successful. Mm-hmm. And then in 2015, I and the group Connecting Consciousness, which I'd formed, also took it upon ourselves to look into the matter. And as a result of that, a number of commentators are now saying that CERN does not operate correctly, the portal doesn't work, therefore the bad guys are trapped on the planet. But that doesn't stop aliens or extraterrestrials from exiting. They can still exit, but the extra dimensional creatures, these are the beings that exist in the fourth dimension and come through. These are reptilians, some rays, they're trapped here. But the true extraterrestrials, the true ETs, they're third dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
They would travel traditionally in a spacecraft, as most people would understand. So what's happened is the bad guys are trapped on the planet, and they have got to make a decision as to whether they want to try to come to some arrangement as human consciousness evolves, mm-hmm. or whether they have to go down fighting. And that's what I think we're waiting for them to make their move.
Interesting. So they're stuck here, and for them it must be quite a shock, because they've been going in one negative path for a long time, and suddenly now they're faced with a situation where they have to change.
Yes, and many commentators use the words "the Earth is in quarantine,"
mm-hmm.
but they don't really understand quite what that means. They use the term but don't fully understand it. And mm-hmm. what it means is, not only is there an embargo around the Earth in terms of space flight, but there is an embargo, which means that you cannot leave to the fourth dimension and back again. Mm-hmm. So the good guys have actually shut down, closed, guarded most of the portals, or the major portals that exist both above ground and below ground. That's why the bad guys got the Hadron Collider built, because they saw it as a way of breaking out of the prison. But of course that hasn't worked. So it is a difficult situation, but not an impossible one. And those people who perhaps have followed a negative path, this is their chance now to turn over a new leaf and try and be more positive.
One thing I wanted to ask you, wanted to add and make a comment, then ask you, Simon. According to my Galactic Alliance friends, 500,000 years ago, there was a war going on in which Marduk, which is now the asteroid belt in this solar system, was destroyed by the reptilians. And that as a result of that war, there was a Cold War agreement between the reptilians and the Galactics, and it was a treaty that's been broken so many times. But during that time, from what I know, the reptilians at one point were benevolent, and then they were influenced by. By their white-winged cousins from another dimension who came in and corrupted them to a negative path. So there is historical precedent for the reptilians to be benevolent. It's just that it's been a long time since they've been benevolent.
Right. The battle you're referring to, what happened was that the Alliance or the Federation put up such a stout fight that the reptilian faction realized that it would be fought to a standstill. Neither side could win, but neither side could lose. So an agreement was reached to divide up, to put a demarcation line through the Earth. I don't mean a physical line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean what can be done and what can't be done. Now, what's interesting here is that the what you're calling the white reptilians,
mm-hmm.
People perhaps can be forgiven for thinking that there's just one group of reptiles, one group of reptilians. There isn't. There are many groups.
Mm-hmm.
But they all have allegiance to the white Draconis. So a Draconis reptilian could turn up at a council meeting of reptilians many, many, many light years away from its own place. And that group is honor bound to accept the ruling of the white lord.
Mm-hmm.
So when the white Draconis went out into the multiverse and started meeting all these factioned groups of reptilians,
mm-hmm.
they attempted to win them over to their cause. We have to also add into this, there was the contamination of AI, artificial intelligence. So we didn't just have a straightforward, I am your leader, follow me.
Mm-hmm.
We had subversion going on. So that's what's made it very complicated. And so for the human group, the Alliance or the Federation, they were sort of playing a waiting game, really, just to, you know, nobody wants a war, but you have to decide which planets you will give up and which planets you won't give up. And Earth was a planet they wouldn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we've had this war fought for millions of years, both wow. above the planet, on the planet, and underneath the planet.
Is this why that we've had evil as an experiment here between, like, so that between the white and the dark, the white and light and the good and bad between the galactics and the reptilians for all these years?
I agree with you, Ted. I think it started as an experiment, but mm-hmm. what happened was the sheer strength of free will that the human consciousness developed. We as a peoples took the, I can't call it a war, but we took the intent completely down a different road, a way that nobody would have ever expected. And it became a fascination. This planet and its people became a fascination for just about every technologically advanced living creature that could get here and have a good old look at us. Mm-hmm. So whilst we could say it is a struggle between positive energy and negative energy, mm-hmm. I think it's also a struggle for all of creation. I think what's taking place on this planet is a mirror image of what all of life is about. It's about the right to live, the right to make decisions, and the right to be left alone. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what the human race is trying to achieve for itself, the right to have the freedom of action and movement and belief without somebody coming along and saying, you can't do that.
I think that's a fascinating point, Simon, because I know that many people have argued that since the U.S. government has been in collaboration with the reptilians at least since the 50s, and some say way before that, that many people believe that our free will was taken away from us through the implant process, so that we didn't have any free will left. But that free will now is coming, from coming back to us now. So we hopefully will make the right decisions for ourselves.
I do agree. I think it's very easy to judge, and I don't want mm-hmm. to be harsh. I think if we go right back to the 1950s, and we can imagine successive presidents being sworn into office and then being faced with a situation where there is an outside group of non-humans who have such a technological advance that it's impossible to fight them. Mm-hmm. So the American government and America had set itself up as the policeman of the world, quite rightly, actually, my opinion, but having set itself up as the policeman of the world, it couldn't then publicly admit that it didn't have the capability to protect, never mind the world, it couldn't even protect its own people. And so what successive presidents did was stall for time. They gave ground, they allowed this, they allowed that. They did things that maybe they shouldn't have done, but the reality was that they were buying time to achieve a technological parity. Now that parity was neared or brought closer by the time of President Ronald Reagan and the very infamous or very famous quote of Star Wars.
Oh.
So by the time Ronald Reagan was halfway mm-hmm. through his presidency, mm-hmm. the United States of America was in a position technologically to defend itself against alien attack. And that was the turning point. That was the point onwards that the good guys in the American government, and there are a lot of them, mm-hmm. Began to think that they might just make it. But prior to that, everyone was living in a very difficult situation.
Well, that's fascinating, because now I always wondered why the Star Wars even happened, and now you just explained it in 25 words or less.
Huh. Well,
no, but you just explained it. You just gave a really good explanation, I think, for why we had Star Wars. Because, frankly, I remember that time during the Reagan presidency, and I kind of wondered why were we even doing Star Wars. Now I know.
Well, I think when President Reagan was continually asked by the press in a matter of, he was very frustrated because he couldn't go out, he couldn't get into his limousine, he couldn't go anywhere without members of the press shouting at him.
Right.
For those who are too young to remember, basically NASA had been fitting its spacecraft with infrared cameras mm-hmm. and from the NASA craft filming down on Earth, and you could see all of these basically alien craft, or what appeared to be alien craft, all maneuvering, etc., etc. Now, there were two, I think they were American, I don't think they were Australian, there were two guys who were absolutely focused on space, and they had 12 old VHS video recorders, the old-fashioned tape recorders.
Sure.
And they worked for years, loading one tape in, then another, and they had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of this NASA footage. And then some years later, they went back through them and they found these pictures. And that was released to the press. Then the press ran with it. And Reagan, under great pressure, said, look, we're, and his quote was, look, we're conducting a Star Wars experiment. And that was the giveaway quote. And basically what you're seeing on some of those pictures are human, we call them replica craft, human spacecraft, but replicated on alien technology.
Wow.
And they were up around the Earth. And what the US was doing were firing missiles, ordinary ground-to-air missiles, and seeing how the craft could evade those missiles. What they were trying to do was to say, can we build a shield around the Earth? And that's what they were up to.
Fascinating, fascinating. Well, let's go to today, which is now about 40 years later. What mm-hmm. what is the state of art of Earth technology now, as compared to these other extraterrestrial civilizations, from what you know?
The Earth now, in terms of, is probably something like 100 years behind the major players. Now, that may sound a huge amount of time, but compared to what we were 40, 50 years ago, we were 1,000 years behind. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys were so lucky in one way because you had the Roswell space crash on your soil, mm-hmm. In New Mexico. And if we take 2 minutes just to understand that my point is that was the most important space crash of all history. It cannot be beaten. It was the most important mm-hmm. because the technology that was deliberately crashed onto Earth mm-hmm. Allowed the American nation overnight, we're talking 6 months, to go from a very basic analog primitive technology mm-hmm. through to the beginnings of modern technology. So when that spacecraft crashed, 6 months later, Bell Labs produced under Professor Shockley or Dr. Shockley the first transistor. Now, it's absolutely no coincidence that 6 months after the Roswell space crash, the Americans announced that they had created the first transistor, whereas the vacuum tube had been around from about 1880 or 1888 mm-hmm. and had gone through two world wars
right.
out the other end and still going strong in 1940, 47, 48, 49.
Sure.
Basically because nobody on this planet had the concept of creating something to take the place of a valve. So we were stuck. We were stuck in a primitive form of technology, and something somewhere decided to give the humans a boost. This was two craft that crashed, but the major one that crashed that was recovered contained so much material, and it was that over the next 20 years that boosted America. And that's one of the key reasons that America was dominant over Russia, or the Soviet Union as it was, and every other country. Not because there weren't spacecraft crashing all over the globe, there were, but none of them had such a range of equipment in a very small craft. And what they did was they packed this small craft through a wide range of technologies, knowing full well that many of them would survive the impact, and that they know that humans are fantastic at replicating. So what we had was a kickstart, and unfortunately, we are now looking at the end product of that, which is artificial intelligence.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Wow, that's a fascinating analysis. I was in Peru a couple of months ago, and at the Lima airport, I was flying back to the U.S., Simon, and this huge, there was this huge cell phone ad by Hawang, H-A-W-A-N-G. I think it's a South Korean company. But it showed a human, but it wasn't completely human. It was a fellow. It looked like he'd stepped up. It looked like he was part of the Borg, where he's half human, half machine. And he was holding up this cell phone, and the advertising thing under it says, AI is here, and this is the future, okay? And it was pretty blatant. I was amazed. I took a picture of it. I'll send it to you.
Please do. Please do. Yeah,
I will send it to you. But a lot of times there will be messages in advertising like that, which the negative forces want to tell everybody. So they do that, but they do it kind of in an indirect way. I don't think that's going to happen personally. What's your viewpoint on that? I don't see us becoming like a Borg machine.
Ted, I totally agree with you, because no amount of slick adverts on the television or the cinema is going to convince me to give up one of my arms in order to have a piece of metal stuck in me so I can open my garage door without having to turn a key. I'm not going to give up my humanness because somebody, an ad man, tells me I should. And I think that they have misunderstood and they have underestimated the American people. Mm-hmm. I think the vast majority of the American people will say, we can see where this is going and we don't want any part of it.
Right, exactly. And we're not children. People are intelligent. They know what they want. They don't like being told what to do, and they want to make up their own minds, whatever, you know, for the best for this planet. And absolutely.
Well, you know what, Ted? If you're good enough to pay taxes, then you're good enough to have your opinion heard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem we've got over the planet. The baddies want our taxes, but they don't want to hear our opinion. Well, and that's what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I agree. One thing I wanted to tell you, I know that on March 6th, you had a blog about President Trump gently disclosing the secret space program. I'd love your opinion on that.
Yes, he was at a United States Air Force in a hangar, I think. I don't know if he was standing next to an F-16, but he was standing, or it would have been one of the more modern Raptor fighters, probably. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, doing what presidents do, which is rally the troops, quite right as well. Mm-hmm. But he threw in a comment. He said, "We've got a Navy, we've got an Army, we've got an Air Force." And then he said, "Well, why don't we have a space force?" Oh. And everybody sort of laughed. And he said, "When I first thought about it," he said, I thought that was really kooky. But he said, "You know, the more I think about it, the more I think we should have a space force." Now, what he was doing was he wasn't going to come out and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, when I became a president, I inherited a secret space program."
Right.
He can't do that. Right. But what he could do was start to disclose by saying, "There is such a thing as a secret space program, and I'm going to tell you about it." So he can't be in trouble because he didn't say, "I categorically tell you this," but he did it in such a way that anybody who had eyes to hear, ears to hear and eyes to see, would have understood that President Trump was trying to get disclosure out there. A very brave man, because no other president has talked about a secret space program, but he did.
Oh, interesting. Well, a week from today, I'm having Jerome Corsi on my show, and he just came out with a best-selling book called "Killing the Deep State," about all the attempts in stopping President Trump. So that'll be interesting.
Oh, it would be.
Yeah, to have him on. So we'll be talking about that. But someone told me recently there had been 6 or 7 attempts on his life. Do you know much about that, Simon?
There have been 6 to my knowledge.
6, okay.
Yes, and in fact, on my website, I'd said that there was going to be another attempt. And then I think about a week after my warning, that was the chap that they found on the White House lawn. The point for this was they didn't know whether this guy was trying to break into the White House or whether he was getting out of the White House. So they caught him on the lawn, but weren't clear whether he was trying to come in or going out. Mm-hmm. And if he was going out, they thought that he'd he might have placed a bomb.
Oh.
What I was saying was it wasn't a bomb he was placing, it was surveillance equipment that he was trying to place.
Oh.
Now, that we might not say that was an attempt on his life, but what we can say, it was an attempt to enter the grounds. So I think there have been six attempts of varying degrees of seriousness,
mm-hmm,
to try to basically stop Trump. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting is, of course, this leads us back to President Kennedy back in 63, who was eliminated by some negative elements. And I think a lot of those negative elements are still there. But I just have a feeling, and I want to run this by you, that President Trump is now getting protection and help from the good guys. Is that true? From the Galactics? Is he getting help?
He is. I think that when he did not accept the normal offer from a reptilian-type faction, mm-hmm, and also overtures from the Vatican, he turned them down very politely.
Mm-hmm.
That meant that he'd sent a signal, and therefore the other side, the side that's much more human, was then invited in. Although they have to be very cautious. They can't be as overt as they are with Russia. The positive human element is very open with its Russian dealings in comparison to America,
mm-hmm,
because every corridor of power in the US, there's at least one bad guy somewhere. So has to be very covert,
mm-hmm,
very covert. Although having said that, the military have expunged most of the bad people from its ranks, and that's really exciting news.
I think it was last year or the year before, Simon, you were on my show, and for people who aren't aware of this, there's clear differences between the different branches of service. Could you go over those a little bit, please? Because I don't think many people realize that.
We tend to think of the United States with its military, and whether that's the Navy or the Army or the Air Force, and we tend to think of them as one group.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have experience of any one of these arms of service, we realize that they, through historical creation, not just because a strong-armed man comes in, but they historically have been given roles which often contradict or cross over some of the others. So, for instance, we talked, I think on our last time you very kindly invited me onto your show, we talked about the Navy,
mm-hmm,
and I'd said, look, you know, if you think about the Sixth Fleet, it has a number of aircraft carriers.
Right.
Well, the Navy projects its strength and therefore the strength of America right across the planet through its Navy and its aircraft carriers. So would it not make sense for the Navy to have a very important role in secret space program, to be able to project itself,
sure,
into space?
Sure.
And that's something people tend to think of the United States Air Force would be the arm that would be the secret space program. But actually, it's an Navy. If you go right back to the days of Forrestal,
mm-hmm,
who was the secretary for the Navy, who supposedly committed suicide, but I can tell you was pushed out of a hospital window.
Right.
The Navy has been one of the most independent, until recently, one of the most independent forces. So during the time of Obama, the Navy was probably, as an agency or as a unit, I should say, was probably the most strongly behind the Constitution. But now, of course, that's the Army, because that's changed. But at the time, the Navy was very strongly behind the Constitution.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, my dad spent 30 years in the Army, and so I'm a little biased toward the Army. slightly biased. But what about the Air Force? I remember you talked about the Air Force last time or last year as well.
The Air Force was the one force of the United States that suffered the most, because every time a genuine alien craft was detected in the early days, the American Air Force was scrambled to intercept, and many pilots lost their lives in engaging these craft. So the US Air Force always said that it felt that it was being used as a patsy, because it was the one that would go up, and if it failed, it was taking the blame. And that's why they moved to interceptor missiles. They wanted to move to a, a system of defense that did not rely on pilots.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I remember something, too, you said last year that the Air Force is very keenly interested in extraterrestrial technology. And as a result of that interest, they had more a lot of interactions with the extraterrestrials.
Yes. A lot of the private companies that make the circuits that go in the air-to-air missiles, that's a very, very important player here. Also, what we would call the what was originally called the thinking helmet. Pilots today have what's called a head-up display. Excuse me, I've got to cough, Ted.
That's okay. Go right ahead.
Thank you.
You just proved that you're human, so that's fine.
Well, yes, I'm very proud of that fact. there are lots of people think that I'm not, actually. God knows what. But anyway, when you look in at head-up displays, in the visor, for those people who are not familiar with this, when you're a pilot, in the visor of your screen, there is a liquid crystal or an LED display, which gives you some of the more basic instrumentation, but also when you fire a missile. Now, when the United States Air Force back in the 70s had got hold of a number of alien spacecraft, they got hold of what we call the pilot's chair. Now, the pilot of an alien spacecraft must have a soul in his or her body. So the rest of the crew can be clones, that doesn't matter. But the pilot must have a soul because the pilot needs to fly the alien spacecraft by his or her DNA. And if you do not have a soul in your body, you're not divine created, therefore you cannot pilot a craft at whatever speed of light. That's just a fact. Now, what occurred here was that the United States Air Force attempted to create what they call the thinking helmet, which would read the brain waves of a pilot so that the pilot could control certain aspects of his or her space a fighter aircraft by thinking. The difficulty was that the framework of the craft could not stand the G-pulls. If you were thinking bank left and you immediately move the craft to one way, the stresses and the strains weren't up to it. Also, the software at the time wasn't good enough, so they had to drop the thinking helmet, and that created what we call now the head-up display. So they got a very second-best version from it. But the United States Air Force has always, because they are in the sky, they are the first line of defense within the Earth's atmosphere. So they always had a real big shout at any technology that was coming their way.
Oh, fascinating. There was an account by Dolores Cannon I read some years ago, Simon, of a Pleiadian craft that crashed here on Earth about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, and they were on an exploratory mission to go out and find new planets to inhabit. And there were survivors in northern Canada near the Yukon Territory, and they themselves had also a similar kind of thinking helmet. You'd put the helmet on, but it wasn't used for tactical purposes in an aircraft. Instead, it was used for knowledge and learning. And I guess my next question is, in addition to the reptilian craft that our government has captured and reverse engineered, have there been any benevolent craft, for example, from the Pleiadians, which they've captured?
For some reason which I don't understand, the Pleiadian craft crashes are, as a percentage, much higher than any other. And I think it's something to do with the Earth's electromagnetic field. And also, I think that the Palladians are taking more risks because they wish to engage with individual people as well as small groups. And therefore, they are running the gauntlet, shall we say.
Sure.
Whereas the reptilian craft are coming in on a very... or were coming in on a very agreed route. They were controlling the planet by and large at the time.
Right.
We're talking now up to about the 1990s.
Okay.
But I would say there's an equal number of craft. Remember that both the British and the American military forces have been on an active program to shoot down grey, alien grey spacecraft.
Mm.
Not the reptilian ones, but the greys. There's been an active program, and both in your country and my country, our respective military has had varying degrees of success. That's why the energy beam weapon was created. It was actually a Scottish gentleman just before the Second World War, in about 1938-1939, a Scottish gentleman who invented or rediscovered microwaves. Mm. Those microwaves as a technology were given to your then president as part of an inducement to bring America in on the side of Great Britain against Adolf Hitler.
Mm.
And in 1947, I get my numbers mixed up with you guys, an F-46 Sabre
mm-hmm.
was equipped with a very primitive form of a microwave weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to try to use that to attack grey craft. But all through the years, up to the 1970s, they were working with energy weapons. The difficulty is, of course, that the Earth has an atmosphere. So when you fire an energy weapon, whether it's a plasma weapon or anything like that, the Earth's atmosphere will tend to bend the energy beam very slightly. So that's one problem. The second problem is that when you're operating equipment with a ground crew, their brain waves can be read. So if you're in an alien spacecraft, not only can you read the minds of the people operating the weapon, you know when they're going to fire it, there is a high probability that by the time this beam reaches the edge of the atmosphere, it's already off course. There was a third problem, which was at the time the software that was available mm-hmm. wasn't complex or accurate enough to run. They had the weapon, they had the energy beam weapon, but they didn't really have the complex software to bring it all together. So what they discovered mm-hmm. was that when they could find that alien spacecraft were flying on a flight path on a regular pattern very low to the Earth,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking maybe 400, 500, 600 feet off the ground, what the Americans and the Brits did was they created a mobile energy beam weapon. So you'd have your tow truck and a large unit behind it. They would drive that in.
Mm.
We would wait for one of these alien spacecraft to come in at 500, 600 feet.
Mm-hmm.
They'd fire it. The distance between the beam and the target was so short that the beam would not have time to bend in the Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the aliens would not have enough time to respond. As soon as they realized that the ground crew were going to fire at them, because they were reading their minds,
right.
This weapon operated just below the speed of light. There was no time for them to react. So both the Americans and the British were getting a number of good hits.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been an ongoing battle.
Interesting, interesting. Now, one of the things that my galactic friends have told me too, Simon, is that the reptilians' nervous system operates at a 3 times faster than humans do. So, and they're psychic, and so they're able to read people's minds, never mind the machine, but with their minds alone. So that's something that they said you have to be careful of with them.
I have the saying, actually, and I say that a reptilian will almost know what you're going to think before you know it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the reasons that Adolf Hitler went down the road of all his very evil and horrible mind programs because he gave his doctors instructions to try to create super soldiers whose mind could not be read by aliens. We have to remember that in 1932 or 1933, mm-hmm. a grey craft crashed in the Black Forest. There was deliberate. It was just again as Roswell. It was a dump of technology. That's why the Germans were so advanced. They had alien technology. But the mistake that the Germans made was that when they took the alien spacecraft apart, they were fascinated on the nuclear reactor as a means to power their own craft. So mm-hmm. the Nazi Germans went down the route of building replica alien spacecraft based on the nuclear reactor that they'd found in the Black Forest. Now, there was a crash in American soil in about 1942, and this was when Adolf Hitler had decided that he was no longer going to buy oil from the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to go into to Russia and get the oil. And so as soon as he stopped doing that, the bad guys decided that they would drop technology into America to balance the books.
Oh, now, interesting.
What the Americans did was they took the nuclear reactor from their crash spacecraft, but instead of using it as a power source, mm-hmm. they decided to make a bomb out of it. So the bombs that dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they were directly taken from the work of the nuclear reactor. But the, the uranium, was it plutonium? It was uranium,
Simon?
That was used...
I'm so sorry, my friend. We're running out on the first hour. It's so fascinating. Please hold that thought, and we'll come back in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned, everyone. This is Out of This World Radio with Simon Parks.